I'm Cameron Crookston.
I'm Patrick Murray.
And this is
Video Queens, the podcast where two queens take a look back at the queer movies that made them. And this week we're going to be watching
Boy Culture.
And this movie
was
bad.
This is a movie, yeah. Looking back, I originally pitched this movie to Patrick of like, I haven't seen this, you know, in about 15 years. I'm not sure how bad it is. I think this might be like a good movie disguised as a bad movie. It's a very good disguise. It's invisible.
It lost itself in the disguise. Like, it was like a method actor who never came back because it's terrible.
Yeah.
I guess like a little summary of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I do actually have a quote that I did think summarized it well that they say. Which is three hot studs horny for each other living in the same apartment.
I feel like they say that in a tongue-in-cheek way where they think, oh, this is such a reductive summary, but that's pretty much it.
Yeah, so basically our narrator...
our storytelling narrator.
Catcher in the Rye, Miss Mama, named... X gonna give it to you.
Mm-hmm.
So our main character is X. X is a sex worker. He's an escort. And he lives in an apartment with Blowy Joey, the femme.
He's 18. He's such a parties. He's a mess. He's kind of bratty.
Yeah. So basically it's kind of this... love triangle if no one cared.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like X is in love with his roommate Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
Who does he have a job?
He works in a video store and he gets shamed occasionally for it.
Yes, okay. We never see him working there or him going to work or having any obligations. But yeah, so he works at a video store. Joey doesn't work at all.
Yeah.
And lives there for free.
Mm-hmm.
And X is the sex worker.
Mm-hmm.
He is dealing with his love for Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
And also is on a journey with an older man client of mm-hmm. his who is kind of examining... It's kind of like these therapy sessions that are interspersed throughout the movie.
Right.
Where he's like... learning the difference, I guess, between learning the importance of intimacy.
Yeah. So one of the backstory we get about X is, so X is like a high-end sex worker. He only ever has 12 clients at a time, which is like a pretty high number to attach the word only to.
Cheaper by the dozen. Yeah.
That's a better title. That's a title. That is the title of this episode. So X only has 12 clients at a time. He calls them his disciples. We will talk about the religious undertones in this movie. And the kind of inciting action of the movie is that one of his regular 12 has recently passed away, like, in a funny suicide moment.
Okay, yes. So this is like, this was where I was really at the beginning trying to get a gauge on what the tone of this movie was.
Yeah.
Because he's like... he's narrating it, mm-hmm. and he's like, yeah, I have these 12 clients, and they're, mm-hmm. like, archetypes, like the guy who likes spit, and the bigger guy, and the mummy, which is just a guy...
So, the kind of beginning of this movie is he gets a new, a disciple, a new client, who is Gregory, and he's an older, gay, Oscar Wilde type, and he just wants to talk.
Yes.
And he doesn't want to have sex. And he, like, on the first session, he's like, we will have sex when you want it as much as I do. So he's going to play a power game, and they're just going to, like, get into each other's backstories.
Yeah.
And that just kind of facilitates exposition.
Yes.
Which is what I think X is short for, is exposition.
For people who haven't watched that movie, that's not funny. But... yeah, I mean, because he starts it off being like, yeah, I have a real name, but for the purposes of this exercise, I'll be X.
To protect the innocent.
Yeah, and he's like, I've got a confession to make.
Okay, I feel like maybe the first thing we should talk about, because there's a million things we could get into.
Okay, yeah.
Maybe we should talk about the narration.
Yes, please.
So this is based on a novel.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Which I will not be reading. No interest.
Oh, no.
So this is based on a book, which explains to a certain amount. So the thing about this movie is that X narrates the movie.
Heavy-handed.
In his head. So like, I would say way more than half of the dialogue in this movie is X narrating it.
Yes.
But it falls into this weird thing where one of the really tricky things, I think, about adapting a movie or a book to a movie about when it's not like an action-based book, when it's a book about someone just walking around thinking and being really introspective and self-involved, is it's really hard to translate that. So you either, if you don't have a voiceover, you kind of get the Hunger Games where the main character is just frowning and not saying anything, and you have to talk to your friends in the book. She's talking to her head.
Right.
Whereas this, what they seem to have done is just taken all of the book verbatim and plug it into X's head. And it's really pretentious.
It is the worst. It makes it, like, I think this is, like, one of my first notes is, I think I hate the lead. And then the next thing he says is he looks at his black roommate and says, I'm not usually into black guys. And right. I'm like, oh, I do hate him. And everything he says is like, ugh, it's so pithy, but it's not clever. It's just like, and I know what you're thinking. It's just so drab and annoying. It's unbearable.
Yeah. I think one of the problems is that when I say that he narrates it, that's not really accurate because he's not describing action. He's just philosophizing at us for 90 minutes.
And it's always like... They never really, it's so self-hatey, like it's so critical of other people. Like he's like, these stupid faggots just want to fuck. Like, don't they see how empty their life is? And you're like, okay. Like, I'm not blown away by any of your observations. And I'm just like, what the fuck is your deal? Like,
yeah, he oscillates between trying to be really profound. Like, there is one point where he goes to a bar that's called Boy Culture, which does not end up being that big a plot point, so it's weird that it's the title.
It's also spelled differently than the title of the movie.
It has a K in it.
And no E at the end of culture.
Oh, I didn't even catch the no E.
Yes, I did.
So he's got a lot of, like, at one point he goes to the club and he's like, something, something in our Neapolitan gay culture where every flavor is separate but equal.
He just reminds me of, like, your girlfriend's boyfriend who's, like, a bartender at Moxie's and is like, I think stuff.
I'm really... People always tell me I'm complicated. I think it's... Your reference to Catcher in the Rye, I think, is so spot on because I feel like the intention is to create this complicated character who is difficult and grappling with the fact that he's got all these antisocial tendencies. But for that to work, you have to be a really good writer.
You need a really good writer paired with a really good actor.
They were both sick that day.
And they were unavailable, they were so instead we got this. Because... they don't do anything to make him likable. Because in the first, like, the first minutes of the film, he's already being like, ugh, these people, the mummy. And then, and this guy, you watch this old man jump off a balcony.
Yeah.
And then he goes, guess he freed up a spot. And it's like, again, not enough of a punchline where, like, if he had, that would be my note for, like, the movie in general, is like, some of the lines, if delivered differently, like, okay, so I actually think if this movie had been directed by the director of another gay movie, I think it might have soared.
Right!
Because some of the dialogue is so absurd and kind of, like, perversely funny
Yeah.
that if it was delivered campy,
yeah,
It would be great.
What I wrote down is, this feels like Strangers with Candy with all the punchlines taken out.
Yes.
Because it has a tone, like, you're right, it's dry, and everything's a little on the nose, and if at any point Amy Sedaris walked in with an overbite, it would all make sense.
Because, okay, there is, there's a scene in particular that jumps out to me.
Jumps out a window?
It jumps out a window, and it frees up a spot, I guess. where Joey comes up to X's room and is again horny for him and wants him to fuck him, which happens so many times. And so he's trying again and he's talking to X and you're like, oh, maybe they're actually going to fuck this time, because he's like touching him a lot. X isn't stopping him. Mm-hmm. And he's somehow they get onto the topic of, I don't know if it's like Joey has never experienced loss. And as he's undoing X's pants, he's like, my house burned down when I was 12. And his hands are going up his shirt, and he was like, my dog Mindy died in the fire. And I'm like, this, and then promptly overdoses from a drug problem we never knew he had.
Right.
But having him sexual, like him coming on to the main character while talking about his dog dying in a fire. And I'm like, but this isn't being played for laughs. Or is it? Are we wrong?
No. The thesis is we're never wrong. Right. I read that moment as a misguided attempt, because like Joey is kind of presented as X's like kid sister Skipper, and that's the reason they can never be. And this is Joey's attempt at being. It's kind of that moment in Empire Records where Liv Tyler tries to do a striptease and is like, "I'm not as innocent as you think." This is Joey being like, I've been through shit.
I'm deep.
There was a fire. So you can, when we have sex, it's not that creepy because my dog died.
Okay, that doesn't make me like it anymore.
It didn't land.
It didn't land at all.
No.
And that's, I mean, that's obviously a trend alert.
Yeah.
I think trying to gauge for me, like I was constantly like, is this a comedy?
Yeah.
For a while, I honestly thought it was going to be a sexy murder / softcore porn.
Yeah.
Like, when he was, like, freed up a spot, and there's, like, I'm like, oh, is this going to be a serial killer thing? Because, like, he's so intense, or does he kill his clients? I don't know.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, is this a comedy? But it's just... Also, for a movie that's so loaded, like, it's like... It's all about his interior life and all of his thoughts and everything. Like, I just felt like, in general, my criticism of the movie would be that there were zero stakes to anything.
Yes.
Because problems would be, like, in the first chunk, we're presented that, X is interested in Andrew, his roommate. Mm-hmm. Andrew is seemingly starting to hook up, and X thinks that he's being a slut, and he keeps calling him that to his face and wondering why they're not getting along.
We'll get into it.
But he's interested in Andrew, and seemingly Andrew is like maybe not interested or coy or is whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
We're setting up a will they, won't they. Maybe a scene later, Andrew just straddles him, makes out with him, and is like, want to come to a wedding? I want to take a trial run at you.
And it's like the first 15 minutes of the movie.
The first 15 minutes, and I'm like, well, there goes that tension. we just set up this tension and immediately changed it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think one of the problems, you're right, is that the only tension of this movie is, will X be able to overcome his issues with intimacy? And the problem is, I don't care.
We don't care. That's it.
But no, there's so many more problems. I don't care.
Okay.
His relationship to this tension is so, like, trite and, like, uninteresting. And it takes so little for him to deal with it that there's just, like, there's very little to overcome. And along the way, his pontificating on sex versus love is so cringy.
Yes.
And loaded with religious imagery.
It comes in hot with, like... Again, this was where I was just trying to get a gauge on this movie, which is like the opening. We have a narration while he's like riding the subway or a bus. And it's like, he goes, my story is a confession, which are the hottest kinds of stories. Ask any priest.
You're making him so much more interesting. You're giving him like,
Sorry, and you're right.
Yeah.
Because everything is just kind of, is so matter of fact. And like, again, it's just like, my story is a confession.
Yeah, there, that's it.
Which are the hottest kinds of stories.
I wrote down that this whole, 95% of the dialogue in this movie is just, like, mumble confessions. And it's
post-lobotomy.
Whether they're saying it out loud or in someone's head, like, the whole movie's like this. And then it's like a sleepy, bored Batman. Like...
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Anyway, so religion. Yeah, so it's a confessional. His 12 clients are his disciples. Every once in a while, in a very not subtle way, X's inner monologue will climax with a moment of
Forgive me, Father.
I was, and then he'll say a sin, like, forgive me, Father, I was lustful.
I was jealous. Yes.
I was wrathful. It's very it's not delicate. It hangs in the air.
And it's always right after he's exhibited, like, terrible behavior. Yeah. Like, he'll just be like, he'll just, almost unprompted, turn to someone and be like, you're a fucking slut faggot. And then they'll be like, forgive me, Father. Maybe that wasn't kind.
There's also a part very early in the movie where we learn and then probably forget that he has a Virgin Mary statuette.
Thank you.
That he has purchased. He bought it at a store. And he makes a point of saying, I'm not religious, but there's something about this Mary. There's something about Mary, and she, and I don't even remember how he ended that sentence because it made no impression. And we kind of see him praying to her, and then I don't think we ever mention that again. Maybe we see it in his room once more time, but it's not a plot point.
She says she's got a great cunty look on her face.
Right.
And as you said, it's like, it's such a heavy-handed moment. And then it never comes back.
Never connects. It is also the most... I mean, I'm not a connoisseur of Virgin Mary statues. I was not raised Catholic. This looks like something that I could find at Dollarama. There's nothing unique about this statue. The look on her face is a line for her mouth and two dots for her eyes.
Nothing.
Which she thinks reads as cunty. But it's like they did not have the budget.
No.
So even though the framing device is like a confessional and he keeps dropping these forgive me father lines... That none of that ever adds up. It doesn't go anywhere.
No.
I mean, and I feel like maybe... I feel like so much of this I want to excuse. Like, maybe the book does it better. Maybe the book deals with... Because another big plot point is his... Not guilt, but he has a lot of issues around slut-shaming and sex. And I think you could maybe connect those dots that there's some religious guilt or there's just a buttload of judgmentality and he comes at this from a very judgmental place, which he rationalizes with a religious stoicism. None of that is there.
I have a hard time believing that the book isn't trash. I think first of all, you are like a gay professor of gay.
Right.
So.
Right.
I believe that if this book was any good, you would know about it. I wouldn't. You would know about it.
I mean, maybe.
Or you would know about, like, the cultural moment when boy culture came out and decimated the legacy of the queer Bible boy right. culture.
Right.
Like, I can see a world where the book isn't as bad as the movie.
The book might be not very good, but I can see that it just has more in it. So these like random, there were a lot of random bits that went nowhere. And I was maybe there was more to this in the book. Like the lesbian side character who's in two scenes and is presented. So when we're meeting all the characters.
I forgot about her.
Of course you did. Why wouldn't you? When we're meeting all the different characters, we meet his best friend. And we're told very specifically that she's not a quote unquote fag hag because she's a lesbian.
I know what you're thinking.
Yeah.
I probably have some fag hag. That's not me.
No, I can't remember the character's name, but she's nobody's hag.
The just random shot of her kicking and beating a customer.
Someone she works at a coffee shop, and we get a flashback to her beating up a shoplifter. Because she's going to be such a key character in this movie.
Right.
And then they have one conversation where she is, because she's no agency, she has no life, where she's just so interested in, like, tell me about how gay guys have sex or something.
No, remember, he's like, she could read me like a book.
Right.
And he's like, I hooked up with that professor. And she's like, I bet he's someone who just wants to talk and has to wait until you're interested in him. And he's like, wait, that's exactly what he said.
Yeah.
Verbatim.
And then she disappears for over an hour. And she comes back in the last like 10 minutes of the movie and has one line, and I was like, oh, right, her.
What does she, do we know what she says?
I think she says something inane, like, totally. Like she has truly one line in the final, like, climactic moments of this movie.
She does have, I will say, like, her POV is generally that she works in a coffee shop and hates the customers. Because one of her other lines is, ugh, a customer. Yeah. Like, I think a customer just walked in. And that I can stand by. Like, that's a POV that I do appreciate.
I would have loved if she was in this movie more. We could have, because I think this
constantly movie just asking people to leave the shop that she works at and attacking them.
I think it would have been a fun option to give this movie a likable character because it did not have any.
I disagree.
Oh, hit me.
I wrote down, Joey is goals. Joey, I guess they set up that Joey, meets X and says, I want to live here and I'm not going to pay rent. And he goes, and I couldn't say no. And so Joey just lives in the apartment, does not pay rent.
I need you to have better goals. Because what you just said to me is when I grow up, I want to be 18.
Oh, yeah. Let's go in.
Let's go in.
Clear off some dust and open some boxes.
I know my Christmas decorations are up here somewhere. So, I mean, I think the most obvious thing is...
Problems in the attic. Yeah.
Are these your flowers?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so there's the really aggressive slut shaming that initially feels like it might go somewhere productive. It does not, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Yeah, so again... Part of the narrative journey is that X has not had sex out of... he only has sex with his clients.
Yeah.
And part of the way that affects his social life is that he calls everyone around him a slut.
Yeah.
When he goes to the bar by himself, it's one of these, like, one of the things I hate about gay culture, that is, like, my cue to tune out, but I pushed through.
Yeah.
One of the things he hates about gay culture is hooking up. There's an also... We also kind of get the sense... So this is Andrew's character... who's played by Daryl Stevens, who I canonically am in love with.
Yes.
Ty Booty. he has a bit of a backstory where Andrew is recently out.
Yeah.
And has basically not been having any sex for the last year. And when the movie starts, he is just starting to hook up. And X finds this disgusting.
Disgusting.
He calls him a slut several times. And Andrew, like, I think maybe has two hookups in a 90-minute movie. Maybe three, if we count Joey. But yeah, so like any time there is any sex or promiscuity, X is really grossed out by it. Conversely, Andrew keeps calling X a hooker and slut-shaming him for his job. And there are a couple of moments where it seems like where this might be going is that X is mostly jealous. And that this slut-shaming is a misplaced resentment because he's mad because he wants to have sex with Andrew.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really... If that's in the book, they did not put that in the movie. Because it doesn't really... Like, they just kind of always are snapping at each other about, you're a slut. No, you're a slut. No, you're a slut. And it's like...
No one ever says, like, don't call me that.
Yeah. Or why does it matter? No one ever had the forethought to go with, like, it is no business of yours who I sleep with, or like how is having sex immoral?
Yes.
A movie about a sex worker in a love triangle never asks the question, what's wrong with sex?
And wouldn't that be a great line for the Virgin Mary that lives in the closet?
In the musical stage play, she will come out. She will be
gospel music.
Played by a local drag performer of your choice.
Yes, support local talent. Belting to high heavens.
Yeah. I'm seeing it kind of like the beauty school dropout scene in Grease.
Okay. I'm seeing it as like, I'm kind of seeing it as in Spamalot, like Find Your Grail, like the siren emerging.
Lady of the Lake.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a great moment. It's a great cameo for a local celebrity. And in the movie, it's Beyonce. Yeah, but in this movie, we get none of that. We just kind of get some very shallow slut shaming that doesn't go away by the end. So, like, spoiler alert, they end up together.
Yeah.
And as they get closer to dating, and again, there's very little stopping them, there's kind of discussion that, like, if they were to date, Andrew would want X to stop working as a sex worker. And yeah. X is not okay that Andrew would want an open relationship, because both of those things are gross. There's even a moment. So there's a weird moment that almost
because they don't even really explain why, like, where you think they might have the conversation is Andrew being like, oh, okay, like, I would want to be open because if you're having sex with people, even if it's for work, I want to also be able to have sex with people. And yeah. That could be, like, a new... I remember being like, oh, this could be an interesting conversation.
Yeah.
Like, one person being like, no, this is just my work. I'm not having sex for pleasure.
Yeah.
And you're like, but I still feel like you're having sex, and I would like to, and what does that conversation look like? That could be something. Could.
Yeah.
However, Andrew seemed to still be saying, no, I want an open relationship, and I want you to stop...
Yeah.
Sex work.
Because sex work is just empirically gross, and I refuse to look at why I think that.
I mean, maybe he met the mummy, but... Starring Brendan Fraser.
There's a weird... So there, again, very early in the movie, Andrew invites X to be his date at his ex-fiancé's wedding.
I am so happy we are talking about this.
There's some cool things here, but there's a moment where, like, so basically, like, it all of a sudden the movie is a weird variation on The Happiest Season, which we should do. And so Andrew's not out to his parents, but decides that he's going to come out to his parents, and that would be way easier if he brought home a boyfriend. And they have to, like, sleep in the same bed. They wake up the next morning, and apparently X has said Gregory in his sleep. And Andrew says, "Who's Gregory?" You said, "Gregory, I'm ready." And X says, like, "Oh, he's my client." And Andrew says, "Ugh, disgusting.
Disgusting.
He's not Irish." Yeah, and they don't really explore why they're so reviled by each other's sexual openness. And in the end, it just kind of fades out. We learn that they are together. And X is still a sex worker, but he's probably going to retire soon. Andrew is still being open, but it doesn't really bother X that much. But they've never really dealt with these prejudices. They've just kind of, like, dropped the plot point.
Yeah, I feel like, in general, that is the story of this movie, is just dropped plot points. Yeah. And there were just a few other from the notes that I just want to bring up. As, like, as you mentioned, there's the whole thing of, like, oh... Andrew is bringing X home to his parents. And he kind of says, like, no, this is different. Like, I'm going to come out as gay to my black family. Like, that this is a more challenging conversation because X is like, just tell them. Who cares?
Yeah.
And
I'm Batman.
So they go to his family. Again, the strategy is that I'll bring a boyfriend. But he's my friend. Anyway, whatever. So they walk in the door. And the sister turns to the mom and goes, "I told you he was gay." And the mom goes, "But we're gonna let him tell us." In front of them. Like, they're like, "But we're gonna wait until he tells us he's gay."
Yeah.
"Can we take your coats?" Like, so that just gets, again, any tension set up as to, like, what is the dynamic gonna be? Also, that they're going to... Again, part of the plot point is that the wedding they're going to is Andrew's ex-girlfriend. So there's this idea of, like, what's that going to... For some reason, he's invited to the wedding. Mm-hmm. Like, that might be weird for her to see him. And she's just like, oh, because he was also interested in her brother.
Yeah.
She is just like, no, I kind of figured. Also, my brother's single and you two should talk. So everyone is constantly set up as people are like... Oh, I think they really care about something. Yeah. And then the person has a line of like, I don't. Funny thing about me, I don't.
There's no conflict in the movie in which everyone is so grumpy.
Which, again, if that was like, that could be interesting if it was like, if it happened once. Mm-hmm. Like, if they stretch out the whole thing of like this big coming out for the parents. Again, yeah. We've seen this happen before. In another gay movie, the one time, the one of the movie we've looked at. where there's like this build up of like, oh God, okay, I'm going to tell you I'm gay. And they're like, that's fine.
Yeah.
But it's just, it just always feels like they're just dropping it and moving on. You know, Andrew has this conversation with the ex-girlfriend's brother, who is given no lines, so you know we're supposed to care about him. He says nothing. He just looks, like, longingly and sluttily, at, like, at Andrew. They go and talk and kiss, and X storms out for the 12th time.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I don't even know if they talk about that again. Because then Andrew's just moving out, and then we get into the... Then we get into Gregory's story.
Right, we get a big all is lost moment, which is very jumbly, and like Joey is just now from a broken home. I mean, so I think this maybe pivots, if you're okay to pivot into...
Of course.
Normally this is where I would like want to say like, what works about this movie?
Okay.
I don't know that that applies to this movie, because this movie, I don't know that it even works. But I think there is a version of this movie, I think you could take the raw data and adapt this into a much better movie. And the stuff's all there. You just have to reprioritize what becomes a plot point.
No. See, I think that they did. I was watching this and I was like, oh my God, this is looking. That HBO show. Like, it's like, again, someone is like, oh, I know. What if we make a movie about gay people, but they're not fun? Or likable.
I mean, I thought this was a like, this was bad Queer as Folk fan fiction, is kind of how I received this movie. And, like, I'm not going to sit here and say that Queer as Folk is gold, but I think more or less Queer as Folk works.
Yeah.
I didn't, when I watched it, it wasn't through gritted teeth or ironically.
No, I'm sure parts of it are, like, dated and horrible to look back at. I haven't watched it back in a long time.
Yeah.
But in that moment, it was fun. It was sexy.
It was occasionally funny.
It was occasionally funny.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. You cared. You, once in a while, you found yourself caring.
Yes.
Well, I'm going to forge ahead and try and redeem this movie. And you can fight me on every point.
Good. Okay.
Great. Let's go. To your point about... the throwaway lines. Every once in a while, this movie will mention a social issue and then keep moving with full steam. I think if we had pulled over and dealt with that. So one thing that I did read that is different in the book and the movie is in the book, they're all white.
Okay.
So there was a conscious decision to make Andrew's character black.
Okay.
Also, the director is a person of color.
Great.
So that could have been... In 2006, we're going to, I'm not going to say engage with race, because not much of it is engaged with, but we're going to have, like, some characters of color in here. And every once in a while, Andrew would have these comments about race that were never picked up. So, when X walks in, he does say to his monologue self, he's hot for a black guy.
Yeah.
And then about 7 minutes later, Andrew says, I hate when people say
that. Yeah.
And that was like, can we sit with this for a little longer? Because, like, Andrew is starting to hook up for the first time. He's in hookup culture. He's a new gay. Could we talk about the differences between Joey and Andrew out in the world and how racism fits into that?
Mm.
And not that, like, Andrew is, like, obliged to be a character to teach people about racism, but, like...
They did finally talk about something interesting.
Yes!
Like, I perked up.
Yeah.
Because I had written down... the quote of X at the beginning saying, I'm usually not into black guys.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, yeah, I hate this guy.
Yeah.
Like, I do hate the lead. And then 7 minutes later,
yeah.
When Andrew brought up, I really hate when people say this.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, we're talking about it.
And, like, and he says, like, I'm supposed to feel flattered that you're having a non-racist moment. And that was such a great, I think that could be a good wake-up call, because that's the kind of thing that I think a lot of stupid white people would say, thinking it's a compliment.
Yes.
There's a scene in Drag Race where Bob's season, where Bob and someone else are talking about the phenomena of being cute for a black guy and how that's, spoiler alert, not a compliment.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think if we had spent a little more time, again, if Andrew was more of a fully formed character and less of just a projection of all of X's issues.
And the moment only gets, again, for a character who narrates everything he thinks,
mm-hmm.
Andrew says, I don't like when people say this, and X, it just cuts to X go, oh.
Like, with his face. Not even, he doesn't acknowledge it in his mind of like, oh, suddenly I realized that something I'd been thinking or saying was fucked up.
Yeah.
He's just like, that's just a facial reaction. And they, again, just move it along.
There's also a part where when they're going to the, they're preparing to go to the wedding, and Andrew asks X, have you ever been the only white person somewhere?
Yeah.
That's a really important question to ask someone. I've rarely been the only white person somewhere, and that is not a thing I think I thought about a lot in my 20s. Mm-hmm. And again, this doesn't have to turn into a major B plot, but if we could have taken a little more, because once X goes home, he's the only white person in a couple of scenes.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling X might not be super evolved on race issues from context.
Given his literal lines. Yeah.
Yeah. And his general shitty narcissism.
Yeah.
So, like, those are all things where I think this movie could have touched on a few. The other thing, which you mentioned, is Joey, X is talking about how he got into sex work, is that when he was, I think, 16 or 17, his dentist assaulted him and then paid for it. And X is remembering this as, that's how I got into it, and I was kind of into it. And Joey says, like, that's, you know, he molested you, that's assault. And X is like, no, I was into it. And Joey doubles down and says, you were a minor, and I don't have a problem with, I think he says prostitution. I think he says, I don't have a problem with prostitution, but I have a problem when people push kids into it. And then the movie keeps going and we never talk about it again.
Yeah.
That's a more, I don't need this to be a documentary or a lecture series, yeah. But that's way more interesting than a lot of the just kind of self-introspective fluff.
I think that we're grasping at straws because it was so terrible,
yeah.
That like, yeah, in, I don't know how many words are in a screenplay.
Yeah.
Let's say 1,000.
That's probably wrong, but I don't have a real number to correct you with, so I'm going to let you have it.
But you should know, you've written things that are hundreds of pages.
But I've never written a screenplay.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So we'll say 1,000 words.
Yeah.
There can be 1,000 words in a script. One of them is going to be, like, they can't all be the trash fire that this movie was. So they're going to stumble into something that's worthwhile. By sheer luck.
Yes, but I do not think this is Infinite Monkeys typing Shakespeare. I think that there are, I think the, have you ever been the only white person in a place, is not an accident, but I think True. It is a, maybe a well-meaning director who, for whatever reason, can't...
departed from the source material of trash.
But not enough.
Yeah.
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 So I think those moments of...
Good point.
Of, like, digging into a little more intersectionality and some, like, real social issues about being queer.
Yeah.
And I think if the core of this movie was X and Andrew both dealing with their slut-shaming and maybe coming to the realization that it doesn't fucking matter who you fuck, I don't feel good about that as a pun. But yeah, I think if the movie had actually dealt with some of the stuff that it brought up early on around sex and intimacy, and then there had been a few more B-plots around more thoughtful engagements with the throwaway lines, that version of this movie might have gotten, you know, like, I would have given that a B+.
Okay. I think it should have been campier. And that would have saved so much for me.
Yeah.
Because it was just weirdly, it was just kind of in the middle, so it was nothing.
I think that's the issue I had. And looking back, this versus Another Gay Movie, where was Another Gay Movie, like, worse than this? Like, probably empirically it was, but I had way more fun watching it.
Yes.
And I would recommend, if someone wanted, like, a bad, like, it's so bad it's good movie, campy movie, I would never recommend Boy Culture.
No.
If I wanted to punish someone for a wrong or like a weird prank.
Yes.
I would say, have you seen Boy Culture? It's pretty provocative.
And then, okay, also how, I was also at the beginning, I'm like, is this gonna be a softcore porn?
It has that energy.
And then I was, because it is like, all the performances fit in the world of like the Red Shoe Diaries.
Yes.
Like, it's just like, So then when there wasn't even graphic fucking,
yeah,
I was that much more bothered.
No, there was a lot of, like, the three main cast members were objectively gorgeous, and they did walk around half naked a lot.
I need more.
Yeah, like, I think that's the thing. Like, this movie either needed to be smarter, way smarter.
Way smarter.
Trashier, or funnier. But it, yes. It did kind of approach, it felt like it was like, this is going to be, like, the thinking queen's gay movie. Like, it thought it was going to be this, like, philosophical treatise on hooking up in club culture, and there's nothing that works. Like, if you're going to be...
It's like Florals for Spring, groundbreaking.
If you're going to be pretentious, you better be really good at it.
Yes.
I know what I speak.
Yeah.
Like...
Yeah, so what's your excuse?
I'm funny and kind of trashy. So, that's boy culture.
That's boy culture.
Yeah. Boy, is that culture.
With a K. And no E.
Well, thanks for listening.
And remember, you can email us movie suggestions at videoqueenspod@gmail.com or tweet us at videoqueenspod on Twitter.
If you're looking for a way to support the show, you can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. That really helps people to find us. Or just tell your friends. Word of mouth is super helpful.
And of course, don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode.
Bye.
Bye.